from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. Right here. Now, your anchors, Rachel Sutherland and Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
Afternoon Edition.
Here to keep you up to date, the latest breaking news. You'll find it right here on America's Radio News. Here are just a few of the stories coming up today.
The president believes that we have to have more taxes from the American people. We're not going to get very far. If the president doesn't believe that the goal ought to be to balance the budget over the next 10 years, I'm not sure we're going to get very far.
The speaker and the president trying to get to the bottom line.
You were your own accuser through the social media that you chose to publish your criminal conduct on. This does not define who my daughter is. She will persevere.
A divided town, a rape conviction, and a victim's mother.
We remain steadfast to our commitment to extended deterrence offered by the U.S. nuclear umbrella.
The U.S. comes to South Korea's defense.
We're crossing the country and sweeping the globe to bring you all the latest news. President Obama chooses Thomas Perez, a top Justice Department official, to be the next Secretary of Labor, calling him a consensus builder whose story reminds us of this country's promise. The 51-year-old Perez has headed the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division since 2009, playing a leading role in the agency's decision to challenge voter ID laws in Texas and South Carolina. He also has broad support from labor and from the Latino community, although he does have Republican congressional critics who can be expected to oppose his confirmation. If confirmed, Perez would be one of the highest-ranking Hispanics in the government. With his nomination, Obama now has four cabinet-level slots to fill: Departments of Commerce and Transportation, the Small Business Administration, and the U.S. Trade Representative.
Explosive devices found in a dorm at the University of Central Florida have been safely removed from the building and classes have resumed. University spokesman Grant Heston said normal operations resumed at the campus around noon after the makeshift devices were taken away, but the dorm was still closed. The explosives were found by authorities investigating the apparent suicide of a student shortly after midnight. Hundreds of students were evacuated from that dorm. Heston said police were called after a fire alarm went off. While they were on their way to the scene, a 911 call came in about a man with a gun. Arriving officers found a man dead from what appeared to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound inside a resident at the Tower 1 dorm.
The Republican National Committee is endorsing comprehensive immigration reform as part of a multi-step roadmap designed to improve the GOP's brand among minority voters who overwhelmingly backed Democrats last fall. The committee released a 100-page report today outlining dozens of recommendations. The report says Republicans, quote, must embrace and champion comprehensive immigration reform. Committee Chair Reince Priebus also plans a $10 million effort to dispatch political staff into minority communities across the nation this year. The recommendations follow a months-long period of self-examination prompted by last year's election losses. The report also calls on Republicans to take a harder line with corporate America, loosen political fundraising laws, and cut in half the number of debates in a shortened 2016 presidential primary calendar.
Last week, Senator Rob Portman announced he now supports gay marriage after discovering his 21-year-old son is gay. House Speaker John Boehner, who's a friend of Senator Portman, told ABC's This Week that the senator's change on the position doesn't mean he'll change his position on the subject.
He has, in fact, called. Listen, Rob's a great friend and a longtime ally. And I appreciate that he's decided to change his views on this. But I believe that marriage is a union of a man and a woman. Listen, I believe that marriage is the union of one man and one woman. It's what I grew up with. It's what I believe. It's what my church teaches me. And I can't imagine that position would ever change.
Well, on the other side, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announcing her support for gay marriage. In an online video for the Human Rights Campaign, she says she supports same-sex marriage as an effort to further equality for all Americans.
LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones. And they are full and equal citizens and deserve the rights of citizenship. That includes marriage. That's why I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples. I support it personally and as a matter of policy and law. Embedded in a broader effort to advance equality and opportunity for LGBT Americans and all Americans.
Democrats and Republicans have both announced their budget proposals for the 2014 fiscal year. Republicans want entitlement cuts. Democrats want more revenue. Will they be able to make a deal, of course, is always the question. Senator Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee, told Fox News Sunday that anything is possible.
Well, again, I think there, by the way, is a chance on a deal. I know the president is saying the right things, and we have an opportunity over the next 4 to 5 months. I think that, we'll know when the president is serious by virtue of a process that's set up where he is actually at the table or whether he has a designee and whether he begins to say publicly to the American people, to all Americans, that he understands that Americans are only paying one-third of the cost of Medicare, and that has to change for the program to be here down the road. But look, Chris, I think Republicans, if they saw true entitlement reform, would be glad to look at tax reform that generates additional revenues. And that doesn't mean increasing rates. That means closing loopholes. It also means arranging our tax system so that we have economic growth. And I think we've been saying that from day one.
Herr Hasselhoff lends star power to a Berlin Wall campaign. John Norman has more from the International Desk at America's Radio News.
David Hasselhoff has put his name behind a campaign to preserve one of the few remaining sections of the Berlin Wall. And in Germany, the Hoff's name carries weight. The American actor, best known for starring in Knight Rider and Baywatch, is fondly remembered by many Germans for releasing a schmaltzy song called Looking for Freedom shortly before the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. Hasselhoff said Sunday that a real estate developer's plan to move part of the wall was like tearing down an Indian burial ground because of the great historical importance it had. Berliners have rallied against the plan, they say, as part of a wider trend of steamrolling Berlin's tumultuous history to make way for gleaming developments in the now unified capital. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News,
President Obama is getting ready to visit Israel for the first time as president.
Mars rover Curiosity stands down with more technical issues.
And U.S. home builder confidence is down.
Here to keep you up to date, the latest breaking news. You'll find it right here on America's Radio News.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News Network. America's Radio News Network.
Afternoon Edition.
Where the nation's news breaks first.
Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda. At 20 minutes past the hour, I'm Rachel Sutherland along with Ernie Brown, and here's what's happening. The Vatican getting ready for the Pope's installation mass tomorrow. They're releasing details of the event, as well as images of his coat of arms and a fisherman's ring. In addition to more than 132 government delegations, the Vatican says 33 Christian delegations will be there, as well as representatives from Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, and Jain communities. The ring that Pope Francis will put on during the Mass once belonged to Pope Paul VI and is made of gold-plated silver. Francis's papal coat of arms is based on the same simple one he had previously, with a symbol of his Jesuit order. A New York college student pleads not guilty to charges she bought guns for a neighbor, a man who later ambushed firefighters at his burning home on Christmas Eve. Don Nguyen was arraigned today on a three-count indictment in federal court in Rochester. The 24-year-old was charged last week with lying on a form when she bought a rifle and a shotgun, transferring the guns to felon William Spengler Jr. He would go on to kill himself after fatally shooting two firefighters and wounding two others and a police officer in the town of Webster. Chrysler is telling owners of about 2,500 Dodge Challenger muscle cars not to drive them because they could catch fire. The company also says owners should not park the cars in a garage or near a structure until the problem can be fixed. Chrysler says a short circuit could cause a wiring harness to overheat and catch fire. The company says seven incidents were reported. No one's been hurt. The cars are from the 2013 model year and have V6 engines. They were made during an eight-week period that ended January 24th. Chrysler is notifying owners by telephone and mail and will provide loaner cars until repairs are made. Customers should contact dealers with any questions. The recall affects another 1,900 cars on dealer lots that haven't been sold. There's a lot of talk these days about governments being more transparent. Let's go now to Daniel J. Metcalf. He's an adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law and executive director of the Collaboration on Government Secrecy. Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Just fine, Ms. Sutherland. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. So, Freedom of Information Day. Tell us about that.
Well, it's something that has been celebrated in the United States for more than 15 years. It's something that is celebrated on or near the birthday of James Madison, who's regarded as the founding father of government transparency. And we now are celebrating it here for the sixth time at the Washington College of Law. We gather together almost in a FOIA conference-like fashion, people who are interested in transparency and Freedom of Information Act, which we call FOIA for short, F-O-I-A. And we're very happy that we can have people talking about the state of openness in government from different perspectives.
Many of us often feel, though, that the government is anything but open as much as they talk about transparency and kind of put on a show about transparency. It's not what happens. Are there a lot of players in the background that just prevent information from getting out of there, getting out?
Well, you've touched on something that is an underlying theme of our conference here, and that is that there were very high expectations at the beginning of the Obama administration 4 years ago for the executive branch to be not just more transparent than the Bush administration, but far more transparent. Certainly that's what President Obama said, that he wanted to have the most transparent administration in history. Yet the reality has not met the expectation or the promise. And we've had a number of panelists here today decrying the activity of the Obama administration's Justice Department, unfortunately, in implementing the law in a full, even-handed way.
Tell us about the FOIA process. Someone wants to know something, maybe it's a reporter, maybe it's another agency or a lawyer. How do they go about this? It's usually a pretty long, arduous process, right?
Well, it need not be, because believe it or not, all any person has to do, and it could literally be any person in the world, is to send a request, often now electronically, not just an old-fashioned paper form, to the agency, saying, "Dear agency, I would like access to the following records." And the only obligation that that requester has is to describe those records with reasonable specificity and to pay any applicable fee. Then the obligation is entirely on the government to search for the records, to put them together, and then to consider whether any of them need to be withheld as exempt. Other than that, they get mailed off to the requester, hopefully within the statutory deadline for time. Unfortunately, a lot of agencies don't meet that deadline, and that's another source of frustration.
Right. You just don't get a response often, or a very delayed response.
Well, it's a two-step process. Agencies should acknowledge the request to say to the requester, "Here, we've received your request, we're working on it." And then the next step is, if there's no fee issue to be resolved, then that's delivery of the disclosable records. The problem is that agencies have not been able to complete that within the statutory deadline, which is 20 working days.
I mean, certainly there's often good reason not to disclose certain information, but are there just people within government that just don't feel like complying?
Well, let me try to give you the most even-handed answer to that that I can.
Okay.
I was a government official for more than 25 years. I was in charge of government-wide FOIA administration from the policy standpoint. I also was a trial attorney defending agencies in court. And I can tell you from my experience that the overwhelming majority of FOIA officers are very much pro-disclosure. This is what they do. This is their mission. And they are oriented toward disclosing information. Unfortunately, they don't have custody of all of the records themselves. They have to go to a program office within the agency, conduct a search, and then that's where there's some resistance to disclosure. This is just human nature in part, and it's also a matter of culture at some agencies more than others, like intelligence agencies, for example. And it's also something that varies as a matter of policy from one administration to the next, which again is why there were such high expectations that the word would get out as a matter of policy from the Obama administration to be far more pro-disclosure than under Bush. But it hasn't really happened as everyone thought it would.
Right. Well, we sure appreciate you joining us. Sorry, we're up against the network clock here, but interesting information. And thanks for explaining a little bit more about the process.
I'm glad to be with you.
All right. Daniel Metcalf, adjunct professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law, talking about Freedom of Information Day. Coming up on America's Radio News, a group of evangelical leaders has a change of heart on immigration reform. Also, Lindsay Lohan in trouble again. We'll let you know what's going on with the actress.
And he went after the big gulp. Now New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is taking on big tobacco again. Take a look at the markets in the final hour of trading here. The Dow is down 43 points, NASDAQ off 7, S&P 500 down 6. Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News.
Afternoon Edition.
Real journalism. Real balance. This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., getting you the information you need. This is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda. I'm Rachel Sutherland, along with Ernie Brown at 34 minutes past the hour. Here's what's happening.
The president believes that we have to have more taxes from the American people. We're not going to get very far. If the president doesn't believe that the goal ought to be to balance the budget over the next 10 years, I'm not sure we're going to get very far.
The speaker and the president trying to get to the bottom line.
You were your own accuser through the social media that you chose to publish your criminal conduct on. This does not define who my daughter is. She will persevere.
A divided town, a rape conviction, and a victim's mother.
We remain steadfast to our commitment to extended deterrence offered by the U.S. nuclear umbrella.
The U.S. comes to South Korea's defense.
We're crossing the country and sweeping the globe to bring you all the latest news.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg is announcing legislation he says would make New York the first city in the nation to keep tobacco products out of sight in retail stores. The goal is to reduce the youth smoking rate. The legislation would require stores to keep tobacco products behind a curtain, under the counter, in the cabinet, drawers, any place where you can't see them. They can only be visible when an adult is making a purchase or during restocking. The legislation comprised of two separate bills. The second contains policies to combat illegal cigarette smuggling. The bills will be introduced into the city council on Wednesday. Some Republicans in Congress are gearing up to oppose the nomination of Thomas Perez to be labor secretary. Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama says the choice of Perez is, quote, unfortunate and needlessly divisive. He says Perez has aggressively sought ways to allow the hiring of more illegal workers. He's been in charge of the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department, where he played a leading role in the decision to challenge voter ID laws in Texas and South Florida that could restrict minority voting rights. Let's go now to our guest, Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow and manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative with the Heritage Foundation. Hey, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us today.
Sure. Glad to be with you.
Glad to have you. So we're having this situation where there's a little bit of a stir within the GOP about the selection of Thomas Perez to be labor secretary. As you were just hearing Senator Sessions saying that he was aggressively seeking ways to hire more illegal immigrants. What about a change that seems to be coming within the Republican Party about a path to citizenship? I mean, it almost seems like there's a change of heart, and then you hear something like this and you realize maybe there's not.
Well, it's not that so much on Perez, but it's that he was a big proponent of illegal immigrants, for example, before he even came into government. I mean, he was a president of CASA de Maryland, which is an extreme advocacy organization that was opposed to the enforcement of our immigration laws. And, you know, here somebody is now in the government who at the time was encouraging illegal aliens, telling them how to avoid federal law. And now he's being sent over to the Department of Labor. And look, there's lots of other problems with him. Just a week ago, the Inspector General of the Justice Department released a devastating indictment of his division, the one he's been running for the last 3.5 years, the contents of which in some places are almost unbelievable.
So what else did they find, though, within this division he's been running?
Well, the biggest thing they found was systematic harassment, threats, even physical threats, by liberal employees against anyone they perceived as conservative. It included folks who said that they headed up a cyber gang that was cyber bullying conservative employees posting sensitive and personal information about them on public websites. And those people haven't been disciplined. They haven't been terminated by Perez. They still work there.
So do you think he'll really face a big battle, or do you think there'll just be a bit of a fluff made about it and then he'll come on through?
Oh, I think there's going to be a big battle about this. He also, frankly, he's not that good of a lawyer. They have filed all kinds of cases in his division over the past 3 years, which they've lost, cases mm-hmm. they've lost, and then the courts awarded attorney's fees against the department. So the taxpayers basically have had to pay for bad legal work by his lawyers.
Let me ask you, though, about today, a group of evangelical leaders coming out and saying that they do believe that there should be a path to citizenship. This is the group Sojourners. I guess you're familiar with them. I don't know if they're as conservative as some folks within conservatism. But what do you make of that? Some of the shifting here we're seeing.
Well, I see the shifting, but I think, frankly, it's not of a good idea to reward people for breaking the law. You know, it's one thing to help those who legally immigrate to the country to try to fix some of the problems they have in becoming citizens, because the system, you know, is very slow and it's tough to meet. But mm-hmm. the idea that we would reward people who come here illegally, who break the law, that goes against the whole principles on which the country was founded.
What about the Republican National Committee, I guess, endorsing today a comprehensive immigration reform? And it also includes, I guess, a roadmap for citizenship. Do you know much about this, and what's your reaction to it?
I think they're going to have a very tough time with the American people if they don't come out for enforcement first. Because I think most people, while they might feel that, that is a possible path that we should look at, they want to first see that the government actually is going to enforce our current laws and secure our borders before they're willing to allow something like that to be considered.
What about, though, the concern with some of the losses in the last elections? And Mitt Romney just was not able to reach the Hispanic voter. I mean, he just wasn't able. What does the GOP need to do, or the next candidate in 2016, to reach out to minority voters and to win these votes?
Well, I actually think that nominating a real conservative would actually help with that, because if you look at Hispanic voters, when you look at their views on many different issues, they're actually very conservative. But the Republicans keep not nominating conservatives for president.
What do you think of Mitt Romney's performance at the CPAC last week?
Well, I've heard that it's actually very good, but I'm still not quite sure that he's ever said why he thought he lost in the election, or that he's really come to a realistic assessment of that.
Yeah, it was interesting when he said, learn from me, you know, learn from my mistakes. But it makes you wonder exactly what are those mistakes and what are the lessons.
Right. And we haven't really gotten that from him, have we?
I don't know.
Not that I've seen yet,
but I didn't watch every second of CPAC either. But as far as 2016 is concerned, though, do you think someone like, I mean, often a name like Marco Rubio is bantered around, but do you think that might help with garnering some of this Hispanic vote?
Yeah, I think it will, unless he moves away from his conservative principles. I mean, look, as you know, he was a Tea Party favorite down in Florida when he got elected. If he moves away from that, then he's going to lose the support of the folks who helped get him elected.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. We sure appreciate your analysis.
Sure. Happy to always be with you.
Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow and manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative with the Heritage Foundation. Coming up on America's Radio News, well, President Obama is getting ready to visit Israel for the first time as president. In fact, Palestinians there tore down a banner with his image, hurled shoes at it, spray painted it with swastikas. So it is, it's going to be interesting when he actually lands in Israel here in a couple of days. Also on the program, the Vatican is getting ready for the Pope's installation mass tomorrow. And as well as coming up on the show, some frightening moments today at the University of Central Florida. Markets are getting ready to close at this hour here just in a few minutes. Let's take a look at that. The Dow is down 61 points at 14,453. NASDAQ off 7 at 3,242. S&P 500 6 points lower at 1,555. Keeping you up to date with the latest breaking news. This is America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
This is
the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
Afternoon Edition.
Breaking now. It's breaking here on America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date, the latest breaking news. You'll always find it on America's Radio News.
I'm Rachel Sutherland along with Ernie Brown, 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and here's some of the stories we're following. The son of New York City's fire commissioner has apologized for posting offensive messages on Twitter. The 23-year-old Joseph Cassano works as a fire department EMT. The New York Post says he tweeted a slew of derogatory statements about Jews, blacks, and the poor. Cassano issued a statement early today saying he regrets posting some comments that were, quote, offensive, especially since I enjoy my job and I treat every patient with great care and respect. His father, Salvatore Cassano, declined to comment. The Post says the younger Cassano's offensive statements included a derogatory term to describe blacks and a tweet saying he liked Jews just about as much as Hitler did.
Now that a recent environmental report has cleared the way for a decision on the Keystone XL pipeline, a diverse band of activists mustering a new effort to kill the project. The opponents hope to make a big showing at a public hearing on the pipeline in Nebraska this spring. They say they're also appealing to the new Secretary of State, John Kerry, to recommend that federal approval be denied. The activists include both veteran environmentalists and conservative ranchers angry about intrusions on their property. The pipeline would transport 800,000 barrels of oil per day from the tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast. The TransCanada Oil Company said the project would create jobs and further North American energy independence.
The NSA, they tracked a man accused of stealing drugs from a pharmacy because he left behind a pickaxe he used to actually break in, forgot to move the price tag. Well, Jefferson Parish Sheriff's spokesman there says a sticker included a barcode indicating when and where that pickaxe was bought. The store had video of the purchase. And the Times-Picayune reports that a store near the pharmacy also had surveillance video from the night of the burglary showing the same man in a vehicle license plate. So it's pretty easy to track down 43-year-old Scott Rodriguez's home. He was booked with pharmacy burglary and drug possession and freed on $75,000 bond. He does not have a listed phone number, could not be reached, but he pretty much did everything wrong in breaking into this place.
The Pentagon is drawing attention to its use of Air Force B-52 bombers in a military exercise in South Korea. Now, the bomber flights are meant to highlight the U.S.'s commitment to the defense of South Korea at a time of heightened tension with North Korea, which last month defied the international community by conducting a nuclear test. Earlier this month, it threatened to launch a preemptive attack on the U.S. Well, Pentagon Press Secretary George Little said that a B-52 flew a mission over South Korea on March 8th as part of an annual exercise called Fall Eagle. Little said the B-52 was not armed with nuclear weapons. The Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said in Seoul that another B-52 mission is scheduled for tomorrow.
Evangelical leaders say they'll support a path to citizenship as part of an immigration legislation for the first time. They've taken an affirmative stance on the contentious issue. Jim Wallace, the head of the Christian social justice group The Sojourners, says it's part of a sea change in the evangelical community. He says evangelical leaders have concluded there shouldn't be a second-class status for people willing to follow an earned path to citizenship. Sojourners is part of a coalition of evangelical groups that's been lobbying for an immigration overhaul to bring the nation's 11 million legal immigrants into legal status. Before today, the groups had stopped short of advocating for citizenship, but told reporters on a conference call that they've now concluded it's appropriate as religious leaders to support citizenship.
The Parliament of the European island nation of Cyprus has postponed a vote on legislation that would tax bank deposits to help pay for the government's bailout of the country's banks. They're talking about just taking 10% of it. The proposal has raised doubts in the eurozone, and it's affecting U.S. stock markets as well. Financial analyst David Buick said that while he's taken aback at what he calls an insane initiative that would make things worse for the country's banks, he's wondering what kind of effect it's going to have long term.
There are
absolutely ill thought out, utterly insane, and potentially extremely damaging. People need to be kept in line with exactly with what is going on, and to suddenly put in a tax of that magnitude on all depositors, rich or poor, just asks for trouble. We've still got massive problems in Greece, not insurmountable problems in Spain, but very serious ones, in a very difficult situation in Italy, and it just makes the sovereign debt crisis even more in an exacerbated state, one of the most irresponsible levels of implementation of legislation I've ever seen. It's damaged stock markets, it's made the banks looking more vulnerable than they should. They're in a recovery process, they already need billions of euros worth of fresh capital. It's going to make it very difficult for them to raise it, or even more difficult to raise them, as a result of what I consider to be an insane initiative.
Turning now to a disturbing rape case out of Ohio, where two football players found guilty Sunday of raping a drunken 16-year-old girl. The boys were sentenced to at least 1 year in juvenile jail and can be held until the age of 21. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine says after the sentencing that while justice has been served, there's nothing to celebrate about the rape convictions of two teenage boys. We've also heard that some football coaches may be facing charges in this case. Here's what the AG had to say outside the courthouse.
No one can take any pleasure in this. Every rape is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. I anticipate numerous witnesses will be called. The grand jury, quite candidly, could meet for a number of days. This investigation simply cannot be completed, that we cannot bring finality to this matter without the convening of a grand jury. Grand jury is an investigative tool that is uniquely suited to ensure fairness and to complete this investigation.
The Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu very concerned with the Iranian nuclear program and their ability to develop a nuclear weapon. U.S. analysts have said that Iran is at least a year from developing an operational nuclear weapon, while Israeli officials have said they believe the timetable is much shorter. Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland told CNN's State of the Union that regardless of the timetable, the result, Iran possessing a nuclear weapon, is not acceptable.
Whether it's short or long, I think it's important to know, and especially for Israel to know, President Obama has clearly said that we will not tolerate and having a nuclear weapon. And you know the president and Netanyahu are going to be meeting in Israel, which is good. I know that relationship has not been as what it should be, but I think the fact that the president is going there, and I think he'll reaffirm that we will not tolerate that the Iran to have the nuclear weapons, not only for Israel, but for the whole region. You can't trust Iran. They're a rogue nation. They're exporting terrorism. Their cyber attack is big out there. So we have to deal with that issue. And I think right now, with the president going to Israel, that there hopefully will be some agreement between Netanyahu and the president.
The Vatican is getting ready to install a new pope, and Pope Francis has selected a new coat of arms. Here's AP correspondent Mark Smith with more details.
It's based on the yellow cross keys that have long been the symbol of the papacy, but also on the coat of arms Francis used when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires. The new papal emblem includes symbols representing the Virgin Mary and Saint Joseph, but also the symbol of the Jesuit order, denoting Francis's status as the first Jesuit pope.
On Wall Street right now, the Dow down 63 points, NASDAQ off 13.5, S&P 500 down about 10. Coming up on America's Radio News Afternoon Edition.
He went after Big Gulp. Now New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg is taking on Big Tobacco again.
Mars rover Curiosity standing down. More technical issues up there.
And Hillary Clinton weighs in on gay marriage.
If it's important to you, it's important to us. Coast to coast right here on America's Radio News.
On your radio and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News.
Nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here. right here. Now, your anchors, Rachel Sutherland and Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
Afternoon Edition.
News from around the world and across the nation. You find it all right here on America's Radio News. Ernie Brown and Rachel Sutherland with you at 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Here are just a few of the things coming up.
LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones.
A change of mind from Hillary Clinton.
I anticipate numerous witnesses will be called. The grand jury, quite candidly, could meet for a number of days.
Justice done in a small Ohio town.
I think it's ridiculous to say that cutting $1.2 trillion over the next decade, when we're going to spend $47 trillion of your money, is a step too far.
A balancing act between the budget and growth.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
Hillary Clinton announcing her support for gay marriage in an online video. She says gays and lesbians deserve the rights of citizenship. She says that includes marriage. Clinton's announcement puts her in line with other potential Democratic presidential candidates for the 2016 election, including Vice President Joe Biden and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Republican Senator Rob Portman of Ohio also announcing his support for gay marriage on Friday.
A new anti-smoking proposal would make New York the first city in the nation to keep tobacco products out of sight in retail stores. Mayor Michael Bloomberg says the goal is to reduce the youth smoking rate. The legislation would require stores to keep tobacco products in cabinets, drawers, under the counter, behind a curtain, or in another concealed spot. They could only be visible when an adult is making a purchase or during restocking. A second part of the bill contains policies to combat cigarette smuggling. The bills will be introduced in city council in a couple of days. Bloomberg has backed a number of public health measures, including a crackdown on large sizes of sugary drinks and adding calorie counts to menus. The drinks ban has been blocked by a judge.
President Obama is getting ready to visit Israel for his first time as president, and Palestinians vandalized a banner bearing his image just days before his expected visit. The Palestinians tore down the banner, hurled shoes at it, and spray-painted it with swastikas. APTV shows a taxi driving over the banner before it was set on fire in the West Bank town of Bethlehem today. Obama arrives in Israel on Wednesday. He heads to the West Bank on Thursday. The banner with Obama's picture is among many hung by activists asking the president to take note of the lack of 3G frequency in the West Bank. Israeli authorities control cellular networks there, and they've not granted Palestinian telecommunication companies 3G. The Palestinians have long felt aggrieved by the U.S., accusing it of being biased toward Israel.
President Obama announced his pick to be the next Secretary of Labor. Hilda Salas resigned from that position on January 22nd, and the president announced today that Thomas Perez, a top Justice Department official, is going to be replacing her. The 51-year-old Perez has headed the Justice Department Civil Rights Division since, quite a while ago, and if confirmed, they would be one of the highest-ranking Hispanics in the government. Obama said that Perez will be an integral part of the economic team.
I'm confident that Tom's going to be able to work to promote economic growth, but also make sure that that growth is broad-based, and he's going to be an integral part of our overall economic team. So these are just a few of the many challenges working families out there are facing and where they need an advocate. And Tom's the right person for that job. So I hope that the Senate will act swiftly to confirm Tom so we can work together to address all these concerns. I want to thank not only Tom, but his wonderful family for agreeing to take on this new role. I just heard that Tom has been coaching basketball and baseball. He doesn't claim to be a great coach, but he brings passion to it. He may end up missing a few of the games over the next several months, but it's going to be for a good cause.
Republican National Committee Chair Reince Priebus initiating the most public comprehensive post-election review in the Republican Party's history, according to himself. Mr. Priebus told CBS's Face the Nation why the GOP is doing an image overhaul.
Well, I mean, it is true. I mean, you don't see too many political parties or organizations around Washington that put all their cards face up on the table, and that's what we did. This is unprecedented, and it's something that we had to do, and it's something we worked really hard on. Let me just tell you real quickly, generally, what we found out. Number one, I believe our party's had a real quality of contacts problem. If you're not in the community, if you're not talking to people, and the level of familiarity isn't there, then things and, you know, silly things like, you know, Todd Akin and some of the goofy things that were said, when there's a vacuum, the caricature becomes true if you're not there. So if you have unscripted moments and you've got no relationship to explain anything, obviously, I believe you're a sitting duck.
Well, for many Americans, it's the least happy time of the year. That's tax season. To help facilitate the process, the IRS is offering free help to prepare tax returns for many taxpayers.
The Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program is for people who make $51,000 or less. IRS-certified volunteers provide free basic tax return preparation with electronic filing. Tax counseling for the elderly is for taxpayers at least 60 years old and pays special attention to pensions and retirement issues unique to seniors. IRS-certified volunteers will also guide other taxpayers who just need a little help with the process or don't have access to a computer. I'm David Melendi with Tax Break.
Just in case you were wondering, criminals are stupid. John Dorman has the details for the National Desk at America's Radio News.
With all the uncertainty in the United States, now the one thing you can count on is that criminals are not getting any smarter. Authorities in Louisiana say they tracked a man accused of stealing drugs from a pharmacy because he left behind a pickaxe he used to break in and forgot to remove the price tag. Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Colonel John Fortunato says the sticker included a barcode indicating when and where the pickaxe was bought. The store had video of the purchase. Fortunato tells the Times-Picayune that a store near the pharmacy had surveillance video from the night of the burglary showing the same man and a vehicle license plate. Fortunato said the drugs from the pharmacy were found during a search of 43-year-old Scott Rodriguez's home. Rodriguez was booked with pharmacy burglary and drug possession and freed on $70,000 bond. He does not have a listed phone number and could not be reached for comment. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News,
U.S. home builder confidence is down.
Louisville gets the top seed in the NCAA basketball tournament.
And hundreds of muscle cars are under recall.
Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news always found right here on America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news.
Or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News.
If it breaks in this town,
we dig deep
till we know the truth.
This is America's Radio News.
Live from Washington, D.C., the information you need, you'll find right here on America's Radio News. It's 20 minutes after the top of the hour.
I'm Rachel Sutherland, along with Ernie Brown, and here's what's happening. The Pentagon is drawing attention to its use of Air Force B-52 bombers in a military exercise in South Korea. The bomber flights are meant to highlight the U.S.'s commitment to the defense of South Korea at a time of heightened tension with North Korea, which last month defied the international community by conducting a nuclear test. Earlier this month, it threatened to launch a preemptive attack on the U.S. Pentagon Press Secretary George Little says a B-52 flew a mission over South Korea in early March as part of an annual exercise called Full Eagle. He says the B-52 was not armed with nuclear weapons. The Deputy U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says in Seoul says that another B-52 mission is scheduled for tomorrow.
The Supreme Court's turned away an appeal from a Minnesota woman who's been ordered to repay record companies $222,000 for the unauthorized downloading of copyrighted music. The justices didn't comment in letting stand the judgment against Jamie Thomas Rassett of Brainerd, Minnesota. She claimed in court papers that the ordered payment was excessive. The music industry filed thousands of lawsuits against people it accused of downloading music without permission and without paying for it. Almost all the cases settled for about $3,500. Lawyer Kiwi Camera said that Thomas Rassett is one of only two defendants whose case went to trial. The other is a former Boston University student who also lost and was ordered to pay $675,000.
Stocks are slumping on Wall Street as traders worry that a proposed bank bailout for the Mediterranean island of Cyprus could cause the euro crisis to flare up again. The Dow fell as much as 110 points, I should say, in the early going, regained some ground on the day. The broader indexes were also lower as our benchmarks in Europe. Cyprus proposing a hefty levy on bank deposits as condition for a national bailout. The proposed measures are stoking fears of bank runs in other 16 nations that use the euro. Stocks actually closed today. The Dow 62 points lower.
Scott Klinger is an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, the co-author of the recently released report, Inequality and the Social Security Debate. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ernie.
Well, tell me about what is the debate over Social Security right now? I hear on one side that it's fine. I hear on the other side that it's not and that we have to reform it. So where do we stand with that?
Well, the problem is Social Security has been sucked into the budget deficit debate, and Social Security really hasn't contributed to the budget deficit. There's a number of different plans out there for cutting Social Security as a means of saving money for the government. One of them has been put forth by President Obama, and that's called the chained CPI. It would be a reduction in the cost of living adjustment that Social Security beneficiaries and military retirees and federal government retirees get every year. And the other would raise the retirement age, which is presently 67, the oldest up to 70. And that's a proposal that's been put forth by some of the members of the business community.
Which one do you think would actually pan out or work the best, if at all?
Well, we don't favor either of them. Basically, both of these take money out of senior citizens' pockets and undermine the premise of Social Security. The U.S. already has one of the greatest amounts of elder poverty in the world. The OECD, which is a group of 30 rich countries, calculates that 22% of American seniors are living in poverty, and that compares to just 6% in Canada.
When I had a conversation with a former Comptroller General of the U.S. About 3 or 4 years ago, and I remember him saying something that I thought was rather interesting. And when we talk about Social Security cuts or changing the program, we're not talking about doing it now. We're talking about maybe 20 years from now, 25 years from now. He said the reality of it is that the amount of money that we promised, it can't be sustained. There's not enough money in the world to pay all the things we promised over the next 25 to 50 years.
Well, there's the first statement is it's sort of half true, that the inflation adjustment would happen immediately, so it would affect workers, people who are already even retired. The retirement age, he's right, probably would be deferred for people who are presently in the last 10 years of their working life or so. But in terms of not enough money in the world, I don't believe that's true. In fact, the various congressional agencies have looked at this and said by lifting the cap on Social Security wages, we could make the Social Security Trust Fund solvent for the next 75 years. Right now, only the first $113,000 of people's pay is subject to Social Security taxes. There's a lot of very wealthy Americans, including American CEOs, who are calling for raising the Social Security retirement age that don't pay anything more than someone making $113,000 does.
And also theirs for what proposed reductions in the corporate tax rate, right, at the same time.
Right, exactly. We in this report we just wrote, we profile two healthcare CEOs who are calling for these cuts to Social Security, and they're also calling for cuts to corporate tax rate. You're absolutely right. And one of the CEOs is monthly retirement income is over $250,000. And we looked also at a home health aide from Pennsylvania whose expected monthly Social Security check would be about $2,700. So a huge disparity there.
I'm not sure, though, what that has to do with the debate about Social Security. People, they have their own careers, their own successes or failures. I don't know what somebody earning a big retirement has to do with the Social Security debate.
Well, the thing that we feel is unjust is there's people with no skin in the game calling for others to sacrifice. When you have CEOs with the kind of power that they have saying that the answer is that the little guys should take a cut, rather than them paying more taxes or rather than their corporation not getting another tax cut, we don't think that's fair, and we think a lot of Americans would agree with that.
Well, you've heard the phrase before, corporations don't pay taxes.
Well, I think they do pay taxes, and in fact, they used to pay a third of the government's bills.
What I mean is, though, they don't pay taxes. They pass whatever tax along to the consumer.
I don't think that's correct. The shareholders pay the taxes. There's no evidence that declining tax rates lower prices or that raising tax rates make prices higher.
Well, I mean, there's nowhere else they can get the money from a corporation.
They take it out of shareholders. Corporations have the highest profits they've ever had. They have record profits, and that's in part due to their taxes being record lows.
Scott Klinger, Associate Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, with us on America's Radio News. Look for the report, Inequality in the Social Security Debate. Thanks for being on, Scott. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Ernie. Bye-bye.
On Wall Street, final numbers. The Dow is down 62. NASDAQ off about 11.5. The S&P 500 ended about 8.5 off. Coming up on the program,
President Obama names his choice for Secretary of Labor.
Explosive devices in a dorm room at a college in Florida.
Also, Republicans are endorsing comprehensive immigration reform.
This is where the nation's news breaks. You're listening to America's Radio News, journalism without agenda.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News.
reliable, and always informative.
This is America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news, this is Ernie Brown and Rachel Sutherland with you. It's 27 before the top of the hour. Here are just a few of the stories coming up for you.
LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones.
A change of mind from Hillary Clinton.
I anticipate numerous witnesses will be called. The grand jury, quite candidly, could meet for a number of days.
Justice done in a small Ohio town.
I think it's ridiculous to say that cutting $1.2 trillion over the next decade, when we're going to spend $47 trillion of your money, is a step too far.
A balancing act between the budget and growth.
We're watching the world and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news.
The Vatican's releasing details of the Pope's installation mass tomorrow, as well as images of his coat of arms and a fisherman's ring. In addition to more than 132 government delegations, the Vatican says 33 Christian delegations will be there, as well as representatives from Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, and Jain communities. The ring that Pope Francis will put on during the Mass once belonged to Pope Paul VI and is made of gold-plated silver. Francis's papal coat of arms is based on the same simple one he had previously with a symbol of his Jesuit order.
U.S. officials visiting Warsaw were trying to reassure Poland that the cancellation of the final stage of a European missile defense system won't sideline the country and that the decision was not made to appease Russia. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel announced last week that plans to place long-range missile interceptors in Poland in the next decade are being abandoned and that interceptors will be placed in Alaska instead due to the threat from North Korea. But U.S. defense and political officials on a previously scheduled visit to the Polish capital said shorter-range interceptors will still be based in Poland, as part of a NATO missile defense system in Europe. Wendy Sherman, the U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, said the Polish site will go forward as scheduled.
President Obama chooses Thomas Perez, a top Justice Department official, to be the next Secretary of Labor, calling him a consensus builder whose story reminds us of this country's promise. The 51-year-old Perez has headed the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division since 2009, playing a lead role in the agency's decision to challenge voter ID laws in Texas and South Carolina. He also has broad support from labor and the Latino community, although he also has Republican congressional critics who can be expected to oppose this confirmation. If confirmed, Perez would be one of the highest-ranking Hispanics in the government. With his nomination, Obama now has four cabinet-level slots to fill: Departments of Commerce and Transportation, the Small Business Administration, and the U.S. Trade Representative.
Don Lambro joins us, nationally syndicated columnist. He specializes in politics and economics. Don, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Hi, folks.
Hi there. You know, I was reading a story over the weekend about this idea in Cyprus about taking 10% of people's bank accounts. That doesn't exactly sit well with most people who have money in a bank, whether it's a lot or a little bit. I would imagine that's going to have a big effect on the economy.
Well, it did have a kind of a sharp tug on the stock markets earlier today, and the markets are down in part because of obviously a nervousness of what does this mean, and is the European Union going to bail them out? But this is that's something that's not going to have any traction on the market or the future of our economy. A very small country, made up of mostly Greeks and a small minority of Turks, and a lot of corruption there by the Soviet Union, rather the Russians, who are using those banks, and money is being just taken out. But this is, I think, just one of the sidelines here in a problem with Europe and the banking and financial system there that has been in trouble, and the recession that is going throughout Europe is really the bigger thing to watch, and whether or not that gets turned around anytime soon.
I want to ask you about President Obama's choice of Thomas Perez to lead the Labor Department. There are some conservatives who are saying that this is a bad idea because he apparently wanted to bring in more illegal immigrants or make it easier for them to get in the country. Do you think he'll have any trouble getting confirmed?
This has just been announced. I haven't really focused on his positions on that issue. Obama has been pretty much getting his way on his nominees to replace departing cabinet officials, and I think he's probably going to get his way on this one. I think they're just going to let him have his cabinet that he wants. And there's a big issue, of course, with the whole immigration that is huge and really overrides this one particular cabinet cabinet post. And it's a battle within the Republican Party and a battle even among Democrats. So and it's one of the top two or three issues that the president intends to push in the coming year or next year. So that's just going to be the thing to watch and the thing that's going to lead the debate.
Well, let me ask you about Reince Priebus. He's talking about, in essence, what seems like a reboot for the Republican Party, maybe a resetting of priorities, a resetting of the image and such. Is this, because they're doing it so publicly, is this something that's going to be effective, do you think?
Well, it remains to be seen. It's putting a lot of money behind it, and they're going to have people going out across the country going to swearing-in ceremonies of immigrants. They want to reach out to Hispanics, obviously, where they got shellacked by the Democrats and Obama in the presidential election, getting more than 70% of the Hispanic vote. So that's a big part of this these recommendations, this 100-page report. And there's a lot of other things. They want to maybe get tough, surprisingly enough, with corporate America, which is, you know, usually the Republicans are in lockstep with corporate America because they create a lot of jobs and are one of the core pillars of our economy. I think this is he's going to shake things up. I think this report has a lot of good proposals in it that to reach out to Hispanics, blacks, the Asian community, which the Republicans lost badly as well. A very entrepreneurial minority that the Republicans should do well in, but did not. So I think the chairman has put together a thing here that's going to, I think, be helpful and shake things up. But it remains to be seen whether it's going to have an effect on the Republicans' attempts to climb back into contention in the next presidential election.
And a quick question to you. I saw this phrase, and I was waiting for it, the charm offensive being used by the president now to try to get a budget deal done.
Well, I don't know how that takes him very far. He went up there. He had some lunches. He had some dinners with the Republicans. The deadline for the stopgap funding bill to keep the government running on March 27th comes up. It looks like I think they're probably going to have some measure, some bill, which they're both houses are going to pass to keep the government financed through the rest of this fiscal year, which ends at the end of September. But is he going to get the taxes that he wants? No, I don't think he is. He seems to be a slow learner on that issue. The Speaker of the House said he's gotten all the revenue he's going to get. Two very different budgets are heading down the track from the Senate side. Patty Murray, Democratic chairwoman of the Senate Budget Committee, $1.5 trillion in taxes. Very few spending cuts. Is that going to fly in the House? It's not going to go anywhere in the House. The Republicans, they want to cut, make savings of $4.5 trillion. Medicare changes, the Democrats aren't going to go for that in the Senate either. So it's going to be a lot of give and take on this, and it remains to be seen how they come down on that. But this is a battle that's going to take the rest of this year, at the very least,
All right.
And may end up going into the next year as well.
Don Lambro with us on America's Radio News. Don, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, folks.
We'll continue. More coming up live from Washington, D.C. on the afternoon edition of America's Radio News next.
On your radio and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News.
This
is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
News from around the world and across the nation right here on America's Radio News. It's 11 minutes before the top of the hour. This is Ernie Brown and Rachel Sutherland.
And here's some of the stories we're following. The son of New York City's fire commissioners apologized for posting offensive messages on Twitter. The 23-year-old Joseph Cassano works as a fire department EMT. The New York Post says he tweeted a slew of derogatory statements about Jews, blacks, and the poor. Cassano issued a statement early today saying he regrets posting some comments that were, quote, offensive, especially since I enjoy my job and treat every patient with great care and respect. His father, Salvatore Cassano, declined to comment. The Post says younger Cassano's offensive statements included a derogatory term to describe blacks in a tweet stating he liked Jews about as much as Hitler did.
A federal judge has struck down a Missouri health insurance law because it conflicts with a federal mandate for insurers to cover birth control at no additional cost to women. U.S. District Judge Audrey Fleisig cited a provision in the U.S. Constitution declaring that federal laws take precedence over contradictory state laws. Missouri's Republican-led legislature overrode the veto of Democratic Governor Jay Nixon last September to enact a law that appeared to be the first in the nation to directly rebut the Obama administration's contraception policy. The Missouri law required insurers to issue policies without contraception coverage if individuals or employers objected because of religious or moral beliefs. Fleisig issued a temporary restraining order against Missouri's law last December.
Another problem is preventing the Mars rover Curiosity from resuming its science experiments. The mission's chief scientist says the rover went back into safe mode over the weekend because of a computer file error. In safe mode, activities are on hold, but the rover remains in contact with Earth. Curiosity was sidelined earlier this month after a problem with its computer memory. The team had hoped to restart experiments this week when the new problem cropped up. Since arriving at Gale Crater last year, Curiosity drilled into its first rock and determined that the ancient environment could have supported primitive life. Scientists have planned more drilling before the starting a long journey toward a mountain.
Another problem preventing the Mars rover Curiosity from resuming its science experiments. I can't believe they put this computer together. How can they give me a headline like that?
Can't they just reboot?
I'm living on Mars, for goodness sake. This is a marvelous achievement, and this is the headline I get?
Yes, that is.
Are you telling me a story like that? I want to, come on, where's this money going? Go buy a Mac instead, for goodness sakes, next time.
They boot up.
Yeah. All right. Here we have this Iowa man. He was pulled over for speeding as he tried to get his pregnant wife to the hospital. He says he was determined to keep going despite the blinking police lights behind him. Tyler Rathjen tells Cedar Rapids television station KCRG that he didn't plan to stop March 10th as his wife Ashley began giving birth to their son in the SUV passenger seat. But a red light, by the way, that lowers the trade-in value on the car, I think, afterwards when you give birth in there. A red light with heavy traffic finally forced him to stop. The baby's head and arms were already out by the time Officer Kevin Wolf reached the passenger door. He helped with the delivery and then escorted the family to the hospital. The dashboard camera captured the whole thing from the police point of view. Ashley said her son will probably be retelling the story for years to come.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg is announcing legislation he says would make New York the first city in the nation to keep tobacco products out of sight in retail stores. The goal is to reduce the youth smoking rate. The legislation would require stores to keep tobacco products in cabinets, drawers, under the counter, behind a curtain, or in a concealed spot. They could only be visible when an adult is making a purchase or during restocking. The legislation is comprised of two separate bills. The second contains policies to combat illegal cigarette smuggling. The bills will be introduced in the city council on Wednesday.
You know, there was a story. I'm going back to the Mars story you just told a moment ago. Because I mean, this is just fascinating to me. There was a story back when you're in the beginnings of computers. They were sending a rocket up, and it had a computer tape in it.
Yeah.
And there was one dash that was out of place, out of place in the tape that was running the rocket's program.
Yeah.
And the rocket exploded.
Oh.
One dash, one symbol in the computer program, and the whole thing blew up. Now, I can't imagine how complicated the Curiosity is to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a remarkable accomplishment that they got it there to begin with. But every day we got another screaming banner headline that there's another problem with. It's so disappointing, especially a space buff like myself.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Pope Francis I. He's the first pope to come from the Americas. With over 40% of the world's Catholics in South America, what does it mean to have one of their own in the papacy? Cardinal Francis George of Chicago told NBC's Meet the Press that Pope Francis means very much to many people.
He means very much to the Latino population because even though many priests in the United States have learned Spanish to take care of a growing number of Spanish-speaking parishioners in the first generation, at least, it's never quite the same to know the language as it is to know the culture. So he comes from the culture with the language, and that will be a source of great encouragement, I'm sure, for all of us, but especially for them. Beyond that, for the Universal Church, it means that we are global, truly, in fact as well as in intentionality. And so the crossing of the water to the Americas is a very historic moment, isn't it?
He also talked about which way he thinks is the best way for the Pope and the Church to proceed from this point, given all of the scandals that have happened to them recently.
I can't close that chapter. None of us can, as long as there are victims, because you have to accompany them if they're willing to be accompanied. Some of them have such deep hurt that they can't trust the Church to accompany them, but we have to keep doing that. As far as the scandal itself, everyone that we know of who has done this, whether bishop or priest, is out of public ministry and will remain out. That was because we had to change the law to do that. It took some time. He supports that. And then we have to be sure that it won't happen again as much as we possibly can, and then stay with the victims. But the structures are in place now. The code of canon law has been changed. The thing is that every time there's a new report, then everything happens yesterday instead of 20 or 30 years ago, which is often the case now.
With both Democratic and Republican budget proposals on the table, now is the time for the wheeling and dealing in Washington. Would both sides be willing to compromise, and what are the odds of getting the coveted grand bargain? Senator Bob Corker says he thinks Republicans are willing to come to the table and make it happen. It was clearly music to Senator Dick Durbin's ears, as he told Fox News Sunday.
Well, Chris, let me tell you, I think Bob just gave an honest and constructive answer. It really, what he articulated is what we did in the Bowles and Simpson Commission and what we've done ever since. We said, let's put everything on the table. And I want to thank Bob for saying that. We've got to, of course, pass this budget resolution in the Senate. Patty Murray's done an extraordinarily good job. And then we're going to move to the next stage, and that is the grand bargain stage. That's what the president is trying to set up. Both sides sitting down on a bipartisan basis, not eliminating Medicare, as I'm afraid the Paul Ryan budget would do, but making sure that it's going to survive for generations to come, putting revenues on the table that are fair and won't penalize the working people across America, and making sure it's a balanced approach. I think what Bob Corker just said from his side is a basic set of principles that both parties can rally around.
And on Wall Street, final numbers today, a little bit of red, mainly because of a story out of Europe about Cyprus, and the government there is saying they're going to have to take about 10% of people's bank accounts. And there was a little bit of concern about what that actually means. That's just to cover their debt and deficit problems. The Dow was down 62, the Nasdaq down about 11.5, the S&P 500 off about 8.5. Coming up on America's Radio News,
Republicans are endorsing comprehensive immigration reform.
An OU quarterback from the 1970s won a couple of national championships, dies in a plane crash today.
And President Obama is getting ready to visit Israel for his first time as president.
Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, it's right here on America's Radio News. Thanks.
If it's breaking now, it's breaking here. On America's Radio News.
From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first. Right here. Now, your anchors, Rachel Sutherland and Ernie Brown.
America's Radio News Network.
Afternoon Edition.
Hey, if it's important to you, it's important to us. Coast to coast right here on America's Radio News. 6 after the top of the hour, it's a Monday Afternoon Edition. Here are some of the stories we're following.
So you have a 28-year-old leader who is trying to prove himself to the military, and the military eager to have a saber rattling for their own self-interest. And the combination of that is proving to be very, very deadly.
Is North Korea a real threat to the U.S.?
Even though many priests in the United States have learned Spanish to take care of a growing number of Spanish-speaking parishioners in the first generation, at least, it's never quite the same to know the language as it is to know the culture.
The new pope has homegrown support.
Well, it's an honor. I mean, I think it was an overwhelming feeling of just being honored. There were you know, a bunch of teams that deserved it.
Gonzaga hits the big time for March Madness.
We're crossing the country and sweeping the globe to bring you all the latest news. The potential Democratic presidential candidates who support gay marriage now include Hillary Clinton. The former First Lady and Secretary of State made the announcement in an online video today by the gay rights advocacy group Human Rights Campaign. She says gays and lesbians are full and equal citizens and deserve the rights of citizenship. The announcement is certain to fuel the speculation she's considering another run for president in 2016. Other possible contenders, Vice President Joe Biden, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, and Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. They all support the right of same-sex couples to marry. The White House is welcoming Clinton's announcement, saying it means that her views on the issue are now in line with those of President Obama.
Explosive devices found in a dorm at the University of Central Florida have been safely removed from the building. Classes resumed. University spokesman Grant Heston said normal operations resumed at the campus about noon after the makeshift devices were taken away, but the dorm was still closed. The explosives were found by authorities investigating the apparent suicide of a UCF student shortly after midnight. Hundreds of students were evacuated from the dorm. Heston said police were called after a fire alarm went off. While they were on their way to the scene, a 911 call came in about a man with a gun. Arriving officers found a man dead from what appeared to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound inside a resident at Tower 1 dorm. People on the scene said it looked like there was a planned attack from everything they saw.
Some Republicans in Congress are gearing up to oppose the nomination of Thomas Perez to be Labor Secretary. Senator Jeff Sessions says the choice of Perez is unfortunate and needlessly divisive. He says Perez has aggressively sought ways to allow the hiring of more illegal workers. Perez has been in charge of the Civil Rights Division at the Justice Department, where he played a leading role in the decision to challenge voter ID laws in Texas and South Carolina that could restrict minority voting rights. Perez is the son of Dominican immigrants and once worked as a garbage collector. President Obama calls him a consensus builder whose story reminds us of the country's promise. His nomination has broad support from labor and from the Latino community.
The conviction of two Steubenville, Ohio teens for raping a drunken 16-year-old girl has begun a larger conversation about sexual assault. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine said the case reveals a societal problem, and it's not a Steubenville problem. DeWine tells CNN that crimes like this happen across the country, and a lack of understanding about rape is the root cause.
You know, if we think that this is a Steubenville, Ohio unique problem or unique to Steubenville, we're dead wrong. And that's one of the points I made yesterday. I'm afraid people are going to walk away and say, oh, this is all about Steubenville. It's not. It's a cultural problem. I will guarantee you that there are crimes very similar to this that occur every Friday night and every Saturday night in communities across this country, where you have people, young people particularly, who are drinking much too much, and a girl is taken advantage of, and a girl is raped. This happens all the time. And so what to me is interesting is that there's been so much media attention on this case, and that's fine. But our attention as a people and as a society ought, and as parents, and now me, grandparents, ought to be on what our bigger problem is. We have a societal problem about a lack of understanding of rape.
The Republican National Committee releases a report outlining a multi-step approach to improving the GOP's brand and follows a month-long period of self-examination prompted by last year's elections losses. Part of the plan involved a $10 million effort to dispatch political staff into minority communities across the nation to reach out to minority voters. In announcing the plan, Republican National Committee Chair Rentz Priebus says there are many lessons that can be learned from the 2012 defeat.
There's no one reason we lost. Our message was weak. Our ground game was insufficient. We weren't inclusive. We were behind in both data and digital. And our primary and debate process needed improvement. So there's no one solution. There's a long list of them. Focus groups described our party as narrow-minded, out of touch, and, quote, stuffy old men. The report minces no words in telling us that we have to be more inclusive. I agree. And as President Reagan said, our 80% friend is not our 20% enemy. We can be true to our principles without being disrespectful to those who don't agree with 100% of them.
Well, for the first time in school history, Gonzaga University earned a top seed in the NCAA tournament. The Bulldogs making their 15th straight appearance in the Big Dance, and they're being touted as a favorite to make the Final Four in Atlanta. Gonzaga head coach Mark Few said he's honored to be at the top of the bracket. He told ESPN that he was happy just to be in the conversation with some of the best teams in the country.
Well, it's an honor. I mean, I think it was an overwhelming feeling of just being honored. There were, you know, a bunch of teams that deserved it. You know, whether or not we deserved it over them or not, I was honored to just be in the conversation with Duke. Had a fabulous year. Miami had an incredible year, as did Kansas. We've been following Indiana, watching a lot of their games, and Tom's done an unbelievable job there. You know, and then to watch Louisville come back last night after being 15-16 down and just win so decisively. I mean, it was just great to be in that mix of teams, and I think it was a pretty tough call.
At the legal desk now on America's Radio News, here's John Norman.
The Supreme Court has turned away an appeal from a Minnesota woman who has been ordered to pay record companies $222,000 for the unauthorized downloading of copyrighted music. The justices did not comment Monday in letting stand the judgment against Jamie Thomas Rassett of Brainerd, Minnesota. She claimed in court papers that the ordered payment was excessive. The music industry has filed thousands of lawsuits against people it accused of downloading music without permission and without paying for it. Almost all the cases settled for about $3,500. Thomas Rassett's attorney says she is only one of two defendants whose case went to trial. The other is former Boston University student Joel Tenenbaum, who also lost and was ordered to pay $675,000. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News,
a group of evangelical leaders have a change of heart on immigration reform.
Louisville gets the top seed in the NCAA basketball tournament.
And he went after the big gulp. Now New York City Mayor Bloomberg is taking on big tobacco again.
Here to keep you up to date, the latest breaking news on America's Radio News coming up.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News.
Break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
News from around the world and across the nation, right here on America's Radio News Afternoon Edition.
I'm Rachel Sutherland, along with Ernie Brown, and here's what's happening. Palestinians vandalized the banner bearing President Obama's image just days before his visit to Israel. The Palestinians tore down the banner, hurled shoes at it, and spray-painted it with swastikas. AP TV video shows a taxi driving over the banner before it was set on fire in the West Bank town of Bethlehem today. Obama arrives in Israel on Wednesday. He then heads to the West Bank on Thursday. The banner with Obama's picture is among many hung by activists asking the president to take note of a lack of 3G frequencies in the West Bank. Israeli authorities control cellular networks there, and they've not granted Palestinian telecommunication companies 3G. The Palestinians have long felt aggrieved by the U.S., accusing it of being biased towards Israel.
A senior U.S. military official visiting Seoul, sending a message to both Koreas, warning Pyongyang over recent threats and reassuring South Korea that military backing won't be hurt by a U.S. budget debate. Deputy Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter told reporters that Pyongyang's threats would only deepen Washington's defense commitment to Seoul. He said that includes a nuclear umbrella security guarantee for Seoul, which doesn't have atomic weapons. Ashton said deep U.S. budget cuts won't alter the Pentagon efforts to make South Korea defense a priority. Pyongyang is angry over a U.S.-South Korean war game and U.N. sanctions meant to punish it for its third nuclear test. It's threatened nuclear attacks on Washington, though it isn't believed to have the weapons needed to do so.
Confidence among U.S. home builders fell this month because of concerns that limited land, building materials, and labor will slow sales in the short term. The builders' outlook for sales over the next 6 months reached its strongest point in more than 6 years, suggesting the decline is temporary. The National Association of Home Builders' Wells Fargo Builder Sentiment Index fell to 44 from 46 in February. It was the second decline since January. Measures of customer traffic and current sales conditions both declined from February's reading. Readings below 50 suggest negative sentiment about the housing market. The last time the index was at 50 or higher was in April of 06. The index began trending higher in October of 2011 when it was 17. That coincided with the start of a housing recovery.
Well, Louisville earned the top overall seed in the NCAA tournament yesterday, while Kansas, Indiana, and Gonzaga also received number ones after a best way to put it is topsy-turvy regular season. Another round of weekend upsets. Mike Harris is here to talk about that. Mike is the sports editor for the Washington Times. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Some surprises in the in March Madness.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, and it's an interesting field. You know, if I'd have told you 10 years ago, you know, one day Gonzaga is going to be a top seed, you'd have laughed me off the show.
Yeah.
But here you have it.
Well, but you know something is funny. But if you go back, if you've been a sports fan for any length of time, you can find perennial doormat teams that suddenly became powerhouses, and now that's how we know them. But it's hard to imagine what they used to be because of what they are now, and Gonzaga is a great example of that.
Yeah, exactly right. And I tell you, you know, I'm going to toot my own alma mater's horn. I went to VCU, and a couple years ago, even though it's a big school, biggest school in Virginia, few people had heard of it outside the region. And now suddenly my degree is worth a lot more because I went to the Final Four, you know, IB and VCU, and people think it's like the greatest school that ever lived. They still don't know anything more about it, but the name recognition.
You've been waving that. You've been waving that degree in your boss's face, asking for more money.
That's exactly right. I said, okay. Hey, I'm a VCU grad. I'm suddenly worth a lot more.
Uh-huh. I'm sure he saw it that way.
The visibility. I mean, most people couldn't tell you where Gonzaga is.
Spokane.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're not most people. I like.
Well, I'm most people. I don't have a clue.
Okay, so given the fact that Louisville gets top spot, is that a smart pick for top spot?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know, there hasn't been that dominant team, the one you look at and go, absolutely, that's the favorite. But I think Louisville has been as close to it. And, you know, one thing, I did a column for tomorrow looking at filling out your office pools. And, you know, you get all these upsets, and you get the Butlers, and you get the VCUs, and the George Masons, and the Gonzaga of a few years ago. But the bottom line, when it comes to championships, that's won by traditional schools and experienced coaches. The last four have been Jim Calhoun, not in this order, Jim Calhoun, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams. I mean, you get the big-time names who win that thing. Most coaches who have won it lost it at least once beforehand, Mike Krzyzewski being a fine example of that. It is a tough thing to do, and you're not going to find the Butlers and the Gonzagas on that championship line. Now, people say Butler, Brad Stevens, young, brilliant coach, almost won it twice. Well, that means he didn't win it. He lost to a guy named Krzyzewski and a guy named Calhoun. So if you look at those criteria, there's really only seven teams in the field that can win it. And a couple of them, you know, North Carolina's probably not good enough this year. Duke's probably not good enough. Louisville, Kansas, North Carolina, Florida, Syracuse, Michigan State. Somebody from among that group is going to win this tournament.
Do they know they're going to win this tournament?
They probably have a good idea, and that's probably one of the reasons they'll win it. Mm. I mean, those coaches, you know, it's six games in 3 weeks. And unless you're a 1-2 seed and you're getting a very low-ranked conference champion, there's not an easy game in there. It's very difficult to guide your team through that field. And that's why I think, I mean, the last who's he coached to win the tournament was Tubby Smith in 98 at Kentucky. And he's not some nobody. He's been around a while. But it was Kentucky, which has won 8 titles. So you're not going to see a fluke champion. I would be stunned if that happened.
Hey, you know, that's an interesting viewpoint. I hadn't thought of it like that before. But somewhere along the line, I mean, for example, the coach of Butler, he's made it big twice now.
Certainly,
those experiences will give him maybe that extra, maybe not this year, but maybe other year to get over the hump.
He's learned enough that he's probably ready to win the thing. His team's just not quite good enough this year.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah, I mean, Krzyzewski lost it a couple of times. Boeheim lost it before he won it at Syracuse. Roy Williams, I'm pretty sure, lost it at least twice before he won one.
Yeah. All right, Mike Harris, sports editor for the Washington Times, with us on America's Radio News. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on America's Radio News:
the Vatican getting ready for the Pope's installation mass tomorrow.
A stop and frisk policy in New York City heads to court.
There's some frightening moments today at the University of Central Florida.
Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, it's all right here on America's Radio News.
On your radio and online at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News.
broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
From Alaska to Florida, from Hawaii to Maine, coast to coast on America's Radio News. Ernie Brown and Rachel Sutherland with you. It's 27 before the top of the hour. Here are just a few of the stories coming up.
So you have a 28-year-old leader who is trying to prove himself to the military, and the military eager to have a saber rattling for their own self-interest. And the combination of that is proving to be very, very deadly.
Is North Korea a real threat to the U.S.?
Even though many priests in the United States have learned Spanish to take care of a growing number of Spanish-speaking parishioners in the first generation, at least, it's never quite the same to know the language as it is to know the culture.
The new pope has homegrown support.
Well, it's an honor. I mean, I think it was an overwhelming feeling of just being honored. There were, you know, a bunch of teams that deserved it.
Gonzaga hits the big time for March Madness.
We're crossing the country and sweeping the globe to bring you all the latest news. A University of Central Florida spokesman says it appears that a student who committed suicide there today had planned an attack on campus. The spokesman says materials found in the student's dorm room made it appear that a wider attack was planned. Police say it apparently pulled a fire alarm in the dorm to get other students out in the open for the attack. Instead, the student was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Photos and mementos that were snatched up and blown hundreds of miles by a cluster of southern tornadoes are giving researchers new insight on how debris is carried by the storms and how it could threaten the public. A new study's documented one of the pictures flights of almost 220 miles over Alabama and Tennessee in 2011. That's among the longest documented trajectories of tornado debris, the researchers found. The photo was among 934 objects in a database built by the University of Georgia Associate Professor John Knox and his students. They say the research could aid public safety by predicting where tornado-borne toxic or radioactive debris might fall. The research relied heavily on a Facebook page created by an Alabama woman who posted pictures of the debris.
Lindsay Lohan will have to spend 90 days in a lockdown rehab facility. She won't be able to leave. That's one of the terms of a plea deal. She accepted today in court in Los Angeles, where she pleaded no contest to three charges stemming from an automobile accident in June. The actress was found in violation of her probation in an earlier case involving the theft of a necklace, but she'll be able to avoid jail time if she complies with the conditions of her plea deal. It also includes 30 days of community labor and 18 months of therapy.
In response to the budget cuts that took effect March 1st, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel has ordered a reevaluation of the underpinnings of the defense strategy that President Obama announced 14 months ago. Hagel spokesman George Little said the new defense chief wants to see the results by May 31st. Hagel's predecessor, Leon Panetta, has said repeatedly that if the forced budget cuts took effect, the administration would have to redo its defense strategy. Little said Hagel's review that will take 2011 strategy as the point of departure, and it'll examine whether the assumptions underlying it are valid in light of the budget crisis. The Pentagon faces the deepest cuts in spending in decades and has fewer protectors of the military now in Congress. John Gizzi joins us. John was a longtime political editor for Human Events. A number of years he spent there. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ernie and Rachel. A pleasure.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's nice to talk to you. The sequester went into effect March 1st, and we haven't seen the apocalyptic scenarios come forward yet. I'm sure that there may be some situations that may happen in the future. Is that a possibility?
Well, remember something. Many of the cuts that were mandated by sequestration do not take place for a while. It was just the law coming into effect, but they certainly don't happen overnight. In addition, Senators Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma and Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania are getting bipartisan support for a measure in which the amount of the cuts, $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years, would stay the same, but they would be specifically implemented by the five service chiefs in the armed forces and, in one version of the bill, by everyone administering a federal program. That's getting some popular support. So while the amount will stay the same, maybe the cuts will not be in the places that were considered so sensitive.
I know President Obama has done something. The members of the media have called it the charm offensive as far as trying to get a budget deal done with Republicans. Is it a charm offensive to get the budget deal done? Does he mean it, or is it just a strategy?
Well, I'll tell you, I talked to the Republican House member who will remain anonymous, who first suggested the idea of the president coming to Capitol Hill to speak to Republicans. And he himself will be having lunch with the president and be able to bring over two colleagues. He likes the idea that they're talking. He had some great stories out of it, but even the White House admits, in all likelihood, it is not going to get either side to change its views. As Speaker John Boehner said, the president wanted taxes to go up, and he got all of them that he was going to get back in January.
What do you make of, I believe, over the weekend on Face the Nation and other Sunday shows, both Democrats and Republicans saying there really is no budget crisis? I believe John Boehner was one of them saying, no budget crisis here. This after, it was crazy for weeks here in Washington talking about the trouble that we were all in.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We have so many people who talk, and so much is taken in out of context. I can remember last year when President Obama at one of his news conferences said the business community in America is going to be fine. And, you know, there's a lot in the Chamber of Commerce and on Wall Street who didn't necessarily agree with him. So I would have to read precisely what the context was Speaker Boehner said that.
All right, let me jump to Reince Priebus. He's talking about what in essence seems like a reboot of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wanted to know if the party needs a reboot. If it does, it's lost the last couple of elections, at least on the presidential level. And there's been talk for a long time that we're not connecting the way we should. But you look at the numbers, and do they have a future with a new view, a new face, if you will?
Well, certainly a new face and maybe a new way of communicating the principle. But as Senator Ted Cruz of Texas said last week during the Conservative Political Action Conference, quote, did we articulate a conservative message strongly in the last election? We didn't even try. There are many who said with a flawed candidate as well as a nomination process that dragged on too long, that Republicans really didn't get to show what they stood for and what the alternative was. I would say that they'll certainly understand things like reaching more people, using the social media, but changing principles, never.
At CPAC, who do you think came off the best? Who do you think maybe won people over?
Rand Paul. I mean, he's demonstrated how Republicans have their voice over an issue that crosses party lines, namely civil liberties. And the fact is that he won the CPAC straw vote for president, did quite well. Senator Rubio of Florida came in second. Senator Cruz delivered a very moving speech talking about his father escaping from Cuba in the 1950s, and he was considered the best speaker at the convention. Overall, I'd say face of the party could easily be a Paul, a Rubio, or a Cruz.
This is John Gizzi, the longtime political editor for Human Events. John, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Call on me anytime, Rachel and Ernie. It's a pleasure.
At the international desk now, here's John Norman.
David Hasselhoff has put his name behind a campaign to preserve one of the few remaining sections of the Berlin Wall. And in Germany, the Hoff's name carries weight. The American actor, best known for starring in Knight Rider and Baywatch, is fondly remembered by many Germans for releasing a schmaltzy song called Looking for Freedom shortly before the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. Hasselhoff said Sunday that a real estate developer's plan to move part of the wall was like tearing down an Indian burial ground because of the great historical importance it had. Berliners have rallied against the plan, they say, as part of a wider trend of steamrolling Berlin's tumultuous history to make way for gleaming developments in the now unified capital. For America's Radio News, I'm John Norman.
Coming up on America's Radio News,
rebooting the Mars rover.
Teachers are grouping students with similar abilities and interests, and they're finding they're getting better results that way.
And a group of evangelical leaders has a change of heart on immigration reform.
Keeping you up to date, the latest breaking news, you'll always find it right here on America's Radio News.
You can listen to them talk about the news,
or you can listen to us break in. This is America's Radio News.
broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
Here to keep you up to date with the latest breaking news on America's Radio News.
I'm Rachel Sutherland, along with Ernie Brown. It's 10 minutes before the top of the hour, and here's what's happening. Another problem preventing the Mars rover Curiosity from resuming its science experiments. The mission's chief scientist says the rover went into safe mode again over the weekend because of a computer file error. In safe mode, activities are on hold, but the rover remains in contact with Earth. Curiosity was sidelined earlier this month after a problem with its computer memory. The team had hoped to restart experiments this week when the new problem cropped up. Since arriving at Gale Crater last year, Curiosity drilled into its first rock and determined the ancient environment could have supported primitive life. Scientists have planned more drilling before starting the long journey toward a mountain.
The trustee overseeing Casey Anthony's bankruptcy case has filed a motion to sell the rights to her story so she can pay her debts. In a motion filed in federal court in Tampa, trustee Stephen Meininger asked Judge Rodney May for permission to sell the exclusive worldwide rights of Anthony's life story. Anthony's 26 now, acquitted of murder and the death of her two-year-old daughter, Kaylee. Anthony never sold or told her side of the story, despite intense media scrutiny of the case. During a meeting with creditors in her bankruptcy case in Tampa on March 4th, Anthony said she was unemployed and hasn't received any money to tell her story.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg announcing legislation he says would make New York the first city in the nation to keep tobacco products out of sight in retail stores. The goal is to reduce the youth smoking rate. The legislation requiring stores to keep tobacco products in cabinets, drawers, under the counter, behind a curtain, or other concealed spots. They could only be visible when an adult is making a purchase or during restocking. The legislation is comprised of two separate bills. The second contains policies to combat illegal cigarette smuggling. The bills will be introduced into the city council on Wednesday.
A University of Central Florida spokesman says it appeared that a student who committed suicide there planned an attack on campus. Spokesman Grant Heston said that materials found in the dorm room made it appear that a wider attack was in fact planned. Police say he pulled a gun on another student who then called police. Heston said the university was in the process of removing the 30-year-old student from the dorm before today. Campus Police Chief Richard Berry said that four makeshift explosive devices were found in a backpack. Berry said he believes that the dead student pulled a fire alarm in the dorm to get other students out in the open for an attack. The student was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound with guns and the explosive.
A New York college student pleads not guilty to charges she bought guns for a neighbor, a man who later ambushed firefighters at his burning home on Christmas Eve. Don Nguyen was arraigned today on a 3-count indictment in federal court in Rochester. The 24-year-old was charged last week with lying on a form when she bought a rifle and a shotgun, transferring the guns to felon William Spengler Jr. He would go on later to kill himself after fatally shooting two firefighters and wounding two others and a police officer in the town of Webster.
The Food and Drug Administration is warning doctors and hospital managers about a nationwide recall of all drugs made by a New Jersey compounding pharmacy because they may be contaminated with mold. The recalled products from MedPrep Consulting include dozens of drugs packaged in infusion bags, plastic syringes, and glass vials distributed in regional hospitals. The Tenton Falls, New Jersey-based company said Saturday the mold was found in 5 bags of magnesium sulfate products dispensed to a Connecticut hospital. No infections have been reported to date, but the FDA says they're working with officials in New Jersey and Connecticut to determine the scope of contamination. A tainted steroid distributed by an unrelated pharmacy last year killed 50 people and sickened more than 720 nationwide. The Pentagon sending a message to North Korea high in the sky over South Korea. Here's a special report.
The Air Force is flying B-52 bombers over South Korea during annual joint military exercises, which in and of itself is not unusual. But spokesman George Little says the Pentagon's highlighting these flights by nuclear-capable B-52s amid rising tensions with North Korea.
We're drawing attention to the fact that we have extended deterrence capabilities.
As part of what the Pentagon calls the nuclear umbrella over both South Korea and Japan, the bombers used in the exercise are not armed with nuclear weapons. Sagar Meghani at the Pentagon.
President Obama told ABC last week that he doesn't believe in balancing the budget just for the sake of balance and that getting the economy back on its feet should take precedence over a balance sheet. House Speaker John Boehner told ABC this week his response. Take a listen.
That's exactly the point. Balancing the budget will, in fact, help our economy. It'll help create jobs in our country, get our economy going again, and put more people back to work. The fact that the government continues to spend more than $1 trillion every year that it doesn't have scares investors, scares business people, makes them less willing to hire people. I don't know whether we can come to a big agreement. If we do, it'll be between the two parties on Capitol Hill. hopefully we can go to conference on these budgets, and hope springs eternal in my mind.
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announcing her support for gay marriage.
LGBT Americans are our colleagues, our teachers, our soldiers, our friends, our loved ones. And they are full and equal citizens and deserve the rights of citizenship. That includes marriage. That's why I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples. I support it personally and as a matter of policy and law. Embedded in a broader effort to advance equality and opportunity for LGBT Americans and all Americans.
And White House Press Secretary Jay Carney asked for the White House thoughts on the former Secretary of State's comments.
Well, I can tell you that the president believes that any time a public official of stature steps forward to embrace a commitment that he shares to equality for LGBT Americans, he thinks it's a good thing. And I haven't spoken with him about Secretary Clinton's announcement, but I know that that's what he feels in general when major figures in our society make their views known. And it's testimony to how far this country and how quickly this country has traveled, as he has said.
The conviction of two Steubenville, Ohio teens for raping a drunken 16-year-old girl, beginning a larger conversation about sexual assault. Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine says that the case reveals a societal problem, but it's not just a Steubenville problem. Here he is on CNN.
You know, if we think that this is a Steubenville, Ohio unique problem or unique to Steubenville, we're dead wrong. And that's one of the points I made yesterday. I'm afraid people are going to walk away and say, oh, this is all about Steubenville. It's not. It's a cultural problem. That I will guarantee you that there are crimes very similar to this that occur every Friday night and every Saturday night in communities across this country, where you have people, young people particularly, who are drinking much too much, and a girl is taken advantage of, and a girl is raped. This happens all the time. And so what to me is interesting is that there's been so much media attention on this case, and that's fine. But our attention as a people and as a society ought, and as parents, and grandparents, ought to be on what our bigger problem is. We have a societal problem about a lack of understanding of rape.
Final numbers on Wall Street. The Dow ended down 62. NASDAQ off about 11.5. S&P 500 down about 8.5. For Rachel Sutherland, this is Ernie Brown. Thanks for joining us on the Afternoon Edition. We'll do it again tomorrow, same time, right here on America's Radio News. Journalism without agenda.
On your radio and online
at AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News.